Now, everyone likes a good tune, but can music actually heal? Can it rewire a damaged brain? Some 30 years ago, Oliver Sacks was one of the first doctors to discover the therapeutic power of music. At the time, Sacks worked with patients suffering from advanced Parkinson's disease. Many had been institutionalized for decades, barely able to walk or even talk. And then in a few cases, something miraculous happened. When those patients listened to music, they came alive. Sacks called their cases awakenings, and he wrote a best-selling book which later became a movie with that title. Music therapy has come a long way since then, and Sacks says he's still amazed by the power music has on some patients.
People who were often motionless and speechless, unless there were music, and then such people who sometimes couldn't take a step could dance, people who couldn't utter a syllable could sing, and music somehow seemed to allow them a flow which they couldn't have at other times.
Now, what exactly does it mean that there is an effect of music? It's not every time or any kind of music that you play that will elicit this response from the patients, is it?
No, I don't think it's an automatic or mechanical response. I think the music needs to flow. It mustn't be too staccato. On the other hand, I think it needs to have a well-defined rhythmic structure. It mustn't be too slushy. I think it helps if it's familiar and emotionally evocative for the person.
You talk about familiar music. When you've seen the effect of music on a patient, is it likely that it is something that they've known? Now, you described one patient in Awakenings, for instance, who it sounded as though what she was doing was remembering playing the music of Chopin.
Well, that particular patient was a gifted musician and happened to, you know, love Chopin and Schubert. What was striking with her was that I would often see her sometimes transfixed for hours with a finger on her glasses, you know, in a state in which she had no sense of time elapsing, and she could stay in the state for hours. But at the piano, she had perfect tempo, but it was even sufficient asking her to think of a piece. She knew all Chopin by heart, and I remember once saying to her, Opus 49, and the F minor fantasy started in her mind, and with that the Parkinsonism sort of melted, and her brain waves, her EEG, which we were recording, became almost normal. So the imagination, the vivid imagination of music is sometimes as effective as the inaction, which maybe isn't surprising because one knows now with brain imagery that visual imagery activates the visual cortex in the same way as actually seeing something, and musical imagery seems to activate parts of the auditory system in the same way.
What kind of effect is there from this? Does it have any lasting effect? The woman who could imagine playing Chopin, what physical response would there be to that?
While she is playing it or imagining it or hearing it, the rigidity, the shaking, and other features of the Parkinsonism disappear, and she can move fairly easily, and she is bypassing her Parkinsonism at that time. But the moment the music stops, the Parkinsonism is back. I mean, in a way, it had only sort of disappeared or been bypassed. Incidentally, there are other forms of music, if you want, other than auditory music. I think of one Parkinsonian woman who used to like juggling in her youth. She would juggle with oranges, with three or four oranges, and while the juggling was going on, while the rhythmic rise and fall of the oranges was going on, she was not Parkinsonian. But if she dropped one of the oranges, in that moment, she would get transfixed again.
So that there are no permanent effects from this. Does it have any practical effects for them?
Yes, indeed, because I think it can allow movement and facilitate movement and speech and thinking and emotion. It can allow the person to move internally and externally.
And this is true for a variety of illnesses.
Yes, well, I think certainly it's very important in people with Alzheimer's, but also with people who've had strokes and head injuries, have language problems, and sometimes have peculiar difficulties doing things or executing sequences, which you sometimes also see with frontal lobe injury. Now, one of the things which intrigued and puzzled me is the power of music to give emotions and to give whole identities which may not be visible or available otherwise. And I thought of this in regard to one young autistic boy, as he was then, Stephen Wilshire, whom I've written about. Stephen has an immense savant gift for drawing. He does hugely complex drawings after looking at a building or a street, you know, for a couple of seconds. But he also has great musical abilities, which weren't in fact discovered until he was about 16 or 17, because everyone had been paying attention to the visual abilities.
Do you know how it was discovered?
I think people saw him dancing and singing in response to a record which was being played. But I've seen Stephen performing musically and singing, and he has all the gestures and the performing mannerisms of various singers. It looks like he's got it. I remember when I saw this, I wrote in my notebook, you know, not autistic at this moment, or something like this. But I think music can give all of us emotions and identities which we wouldn't otherwise have. There are fascinating descriptions of this by Tolstoy, who was immensely sensitive to music and greatly resented it. He was infuriated by music's power to give him emotions and evoke thoughts which he felt weren't his own. He had a very ambivalent relationship with Tchaikovsky for this reason. And of course, in his story, Kreutzer Sonata, a murder is committed in response to the power of music. But, you know, when one listens to Mozart or Monteverdi, they take you into worlds which you couldn't possibly imagine otherwise. You share their consciousness. It's the wonder of all art. And I think this also is part of what's going on in music therapy. I think one can't just say it's rhythm, it's this, it's that. It's somehow the whole identity of the music.
I gather, in fact, that you had some personal experience of this. You wrote about being unmusicked at one point when you had a leg injury.
Oh, yes. Well, this was a phrase I picked up from one of my Parkinsonian patients who had been a music teacher and who spoke of being unmusicked. I am in 74. I had an injury in which I damaged the muscles and the nerves of one leg quite badly, and the leg was out of action and useless and effectively senseless and paralyzed for about 2 weeks after surgery.
You even wrote that you had no sense that it was there. It was as though it didn't exist for you.
Well, absolutely, I felt that. I also say in the afterword to the book, dear reader, you know, if you don't know what this is like, read this under spinal anesthesia, because then you will know. For example, if you have spinal anesthesia, I don't mean one of the sort of silly little epidurals people have now, but a real massive spinal anesthetic, which almost sort of transects the spinal cord, as it were, for a few hours. What happens then is not simply a loss of feeling and movement in the lower half, but a loss of the sense of its reality or its identity. If you look down at your lower half after a spinal anaesthetic, you see a pair of legs and hips which have nothing to do with you. They may appear to be made of wax, to be a fine specimen from an anatomy museum, which are somehow incongruously attached to you, you subjectively stop at your umbilicus, you stop at your navel. So there is a subjective annihilation or alienation then of parts of the body if there is no neural flow, no traffic of impulses from it, no traffic of impulses to it.
And this is the way you felt about that leg?
This was the situation with the leg, and it was the way I felt. It alarmed me, to put it mildly, because I hadn't expected this, and I didn't know if there would be any recovery.
Now, what role did music play in helping you to recover?
Well, after about 2 weeks, I was stood up. A little before that, I'd started to get some spontaneous jumping in the muscles, which showed that the innervation, the nerve supply, was coming back. And then I was stood up and asked to take a few steps. Those first steps were very bizarre because it was almost like trying to operate a robot limb. If I didn't look down, I would take a step which was too large or too small, or which went across the other foot so that I tripped over it. It was a completely unnatural sort of situation. And then, suddenly, a friend had brought in a tape recorder and a tape, actually, of Mendelssohn's violin concerto. And after playing it dozens of times, you know, it was very strongly in my mind. And rather suddenly, as I was standing there, the music came into my mind. And in that moment, I found I could walk weakly, but fairly naturally and rhythmically. I walked for about 90 seconds or so, and then the music, the inner music, suddenly stopped, and I almost fell over, and I went back to the sort of funny robot leg. But here it was as if hearing the music was necessary to restore, you know, my own kinetic melody, my own memory of walking.
Do the neurologists who are studying music therapy, do they know what's going on? Have they made the connections with what's physiologically happening in the brain?
Well, some connections have been made. Parts of the auditory system, which are particularly sensitive to pitch, have been defined, and others which are sensitive to melody. One can have some particular diseases in which one becomes pitch deaf or melody deaf, but preserves the sense of rhythm. The sense of rhythm neurally seems to be at a deeper level in what are called the basal ganglia or subcortex, and these are the areas particularly knocked out in Parkinsonism. But it's clear that at least half a dozen different parts of the brain are involved in the perception and the apperception and the appreciation of music. But having said that, one also feels there's a deeper level in which music calls to the identity of the person. And the central question then becomes the neurology of identity, which is the deepest question of all, and which I think we've only started to approach very slightly at the moment.
Oliver Sacks says music therapy is a hot topic now for neurologists, even though they're just beginning to understand why it works. Sacks is the author of several bestsellers, including Awakenings and The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. His most recent book is a memoir, Uncle Tungsten.